And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Attention, people of Earth. Do not resist us. All who oppose us shall be annihilated. We command the most powerful army of monsters in the universe. They are sure to defeat your Earth monsters. All those who are hearing this are now under the control of the Earth Destruction Directive.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Earth Destruction Directive. I am your host, as always, Mr. Luke Giaconetti, and I would like to thank everyone for downloading and listening to the show today. Hope everyone enjoyed our last episode, where we took a look at the Ultraman Mystery of Ultra 7 miniseries from Marvel Comics, what is hopefully not the last Ultra miniseries from Marvel Comics. We're going to change directions a little bit today. We are going to be jumping over to the world of video games, and we're going to be taking a look at the Game Boy Color game Godzilla the Series Monster Wars. So set your way back machine to the year 2000, and we can talk about this handheld Daikaiju romp. But before we get to that, we do have our news, so let's jump right into it. The biggest news is, of course, Godzilla Minus One taking home the Academy Award for Best Visual Effects at the 96th Academy Awards earlier this month, beating out competitions from The Creator, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, try saying that five times fast, and the biopic Napoleon. Now, beyond the huge accolade this is for the series, it is also worth noting that this win was historic for other reasons as well. Minus One was the first Japanese film, and in fact Asian film of any origin, to be nominated for as well as win this award. Minus One was also the first non-English language film to win the Best Visual Effects category. Now, obviously, as a Daikaiju fanboy, it warms the cockles of my cold dead heart to see the film be so successful in mainstream channels, even if most of the praise seems to be either used as a cudgel with which to criticize Western films, or tearing down the rest of the Godzilla series to build this one up. Regardless, a huge victory for Toho, monster fans, and the King of the Monsters himself. Heck of a way to start his 70th year of stomping around. Now, on a similar note, the DVD and Blu-ray specs for the Japanese release of Minus One have been revealed. And while we are still waiting on official word on the U.S. release as of this writing, we do have some rumor and innuendo, and we all love rumor and innuendo. The word right now is that Janus Films will be distributing the home media releases for Minus One here in the States, and Forbes is reported earlier this month that we can expect a ultra-high-def release here in the States similar to what we're getting in Japan. Now, obviously, this will be a big seller for Janus, or whomever, as G-fans are well known for supporting physical media releases, but also owing to the additional hype surrounding Minus One, especially now in the wake of that Oscar win. In other movie news, we are in the final countdown to Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, here in the U.S. I have been seeing a lot of merchandise and promotional items out there, including the toys, as those of you who subscribe to the show's YouTube channel know, as well as theater exclusive items such as popcorn buckets and even some food tie-ins. That's right, Circle K has a series of Godzilla X Kong limited time items, including two different Froster flavors, which are like slushes, called Kong Crush and Godzilla Blast, along with a color-changing cup. They also have a Titan Toffee Crunch candy bar, and the one which really got my attention, the Kong Breakfast Slamwich, which is touted as having triple meat and double cheese, namely two sausage patties, bacon, egg, and two pieces of American cheese. Hot damn. I do my best not to buy gas station food, and let me tell you, QT has gotten a lot of my money over the years, but these do look appealing. If nothing else, if I can, I will get the cup, because that'll be cool. Now, as I am writing this, I just looked it up, and we actually have a few Circle K's near me, so it looks like I know where I'm going to be stopping. Strange things are indeed afoot at the Circle K. In comics news, the Godzilla Original Marvel Years Omnibus hardcover has officially been solicited. This means that the book is available for order from anywhere which uses the previews catalog. The book retails for $100, although most of the retailers who use previews will let you pre-order at a discount. I use, of course, DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service, dcbservice.com. Use them for many years. I'm very happy with them. This is not a sponsorship or anything like that. This is just personal statement that I have always been very satisfied with their service and their prices. So if you're going to order comics online, that's a great place to check it out. If you're going to be ordering new comics online, I should say. Now, there are three covers available. The first is a new piece by artist Jung-Gwin Yoon. The second is Herb Trimpe's classic cover to issue number 1. And the third is Trimpe's cover to issue number 4, which features Godzilla tangling with the monster Batragon. Now, regardless of which cover you choose, the insides are the same, namely Marvel's Godzilla 1 through 24. I will definitely be picking this up, even though I have all but two of the issues in singles form, as well as the Black and White Essential, because let's face it, I'm a sucker for Marvel Godzilla. The book is scheduled to drop on October 2nd, so be sure to check it out and get your pre-orders in if you're interested in that. And in other comics news, IDW's Godzilla 70th Anniversary One-Shot has been solicited this month as well. This oversized comic features 9 different stories from creators as varied as Matt Frank and James Stokoe, to we've both talked about here on this show, to Michael Gorman and a personal favorite of mine, former publisher of DC Comics, Dan DiDio. The issue retails for a whopping $9.99 and has 5 different covers, including one by Art Adams and one by Jeff Zornow. That comic is due in comic shops on May 8th. So again, check out your previews catalog for that one. And lastly, a shout out to listener John Vanover, aka the Engineer Nerd, who sent me a copy of the book Collecting Japanese Movie Monsters by Dana Kane. This book has tons of pictures of various Daikaiju toys and merchandise, and I am very much looking forward to spending some time flipping through it. Thank you very much. Much appreciated, John. Really, really was so cool to get that in the mail. Very awesome. Thank you so much. All right, that's all I've got. If you've got any news or items that you think would be interesting for the listeners of the show, go ahead and send them to me, earthdestructiondirective@yahoo.com, or reach out to me on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll be sure to give you credit here on the show. All right, I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about Godzilla, the series, Monster Wars for Game Boy Color, right here on Earth Destruction Directive.
When you think of podcasts about religion, you probably think of this.
But at least one religion podcast sounds more like this.
I kick ass for the Lord!
Dorkness to Light is a relatively geeky production in which Alan and Emily discuss topics of faith, religion, and spirituality.
But we do so through the lens of pop culture, like movies, TV, and comic books, because we're nerds.
Our primary focus will be on Christianity, because that's what we know best. But all religious content is on the table.
Well, think about it, Scully, from vampirism to Catholicism.
This is an occasional cast, to be recorded and released as the mood strikes, with topics ranging from in-depth reviews to personal rants about some small aspect of theology or church history, because we're theological nerds.
If these topics interest you, check out Dorkness to Light, .blogspot.com for our more regular content.
Or dorknesstolight.tumblr.com for our more irregular content. Memes and puns mostly. My bad.
Dorkness to Light.
Often irreverent, rarely sacrilegious.
All right, we are back here on Earth Destruction Directive. Godzilla, the series, Monster Wars, was released on November 20th, 2000, exclusively for the Game Boy Color. The game is the sequel to the 1999 release, Godzilla the Series, which was a black cartridge Game Boy game, meaning that it could be played on either black and white or color Game Boy systems. This game, however, was a clear cartridge, meaning it could only be played on Game Boy Color systems at the time, although, of course, all Game Boy cartridges are playable on Game Boy Advance hardware. The game was developed by Crawfish Interactive, who, in addition to the earlier Godzilla the Series game, were a familiar face if you were a Game Boy player from around 1997 to 2002. Crawfish was a British outfit responsible for games ranging from various WWE titles to Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six to Ballistic's X vs. Sever, which it's a really bad movie, but a really actually quite good first-person shooter game for the Game Boy Advance hardware, to Street Fighter Alpha 3, which is a fantastic adaptation of that game, ranging from regular Game Boy to Game Boy Color to Game Boy Advance. They developed for all of those platforms. The house closed shop in 2002, but their logo of a smiling crawfish was definitely a fixture in my Game Boy gaming days. The game was published by Crave Entertainment, another familiar name to handheld gamers from this era. Crave published many titles for both handheld and console platforms, focusing primarily on budget and import titles, which is likely why their name is so recognizable. I would think that their most visible title was the Tokyo Extreme Racer series, which included 7 different games on multiple platforms. They also published titles ranging from An American Tale, Fievel's Gold Rush, to Pinball Hall of Fame, Penny Racers, NRA Gun Club, and of course, the Bible Game. And naturally, they published the original Godzilla the Series as well. The blurb from the back of the box goes like this. Heat has detected mutant activity, and it's up to the world's most famous reptile, Godzilla, to save the Earth. Aliens are attempting to weaken the Earth's defenses by creating monstrous mutations, like a giant underwater reptile, Cryptocleidius, and El Gusano, a 1,200-foot-long worm. The unwieldy title of the game, generally parsed as having a colon and then a dash, comes from the fact that this game is loosely adapted from a 3-part episode of the series, and also named Monster Wars. Regardless, the gameplay is very similar to that first game. Godzilla moves through each 2D stage left to right, being accosted by small enemies as he does so. Our monster hero can lash out with fireballs, tail chops, chomps, claw swipes, and stomps to dispose of the enemies. Godzilla picks up a new attack in the form of a torrent of atomic breath that he can spew for a limited time. He can also block to avoid taking damage from enemy fire. Get to the end of a stage and Godzilla may have to battle a boss monster. Rinse and repeat until the day is saved. The game does not have a battery save, but you do get a password at the end of each stage, so you can save your progress in that manner. Our story is told with static interstitials, with the Heat team getting a report of strange activity somewhere in the world, and then flying off with Godzilla to investigate. This format is ported over directly from the original game, and was very common for story scenes in most Game Boy and Game Boy Color games of the era, given the hardware capabilities of those systems. As you make your way through each stage, the enemies will drop power-ups to restore your health or guard meters as you advance. This is compared to the first game, where your guard meter automatically restored over time. The other major change is the controls. In the original game, Godzilla always walked inexorably forward. Here, you must press right on your D-pad to get him to move forward. The control inputs for the attacks are slightly different now compared to the first game as well, especially as Select, which previously was the stomp, now controls that aforementioned torrent of atomic breath. Like the first game, your attacks will get upgraded as you go to do more damage, but that comes from power-ups this time rather than points. The settings of the different stages vary, starting out in a desert and then moving to a daytime cityscape, then underwater, a city at night, and finally a tropical Pacific island. Enemies will vary depending on the stage, including infantry, jeeps, tanks, jets, submarines, and helicopters, but also including oddities such as mutant squid and mutant rats, and even UFOs in the final stage. The boss monsters are a weird and varied bunch, based as they are on the animated series. The boss fights are stand-up-and-fight affairs, as the screen locks and does not scroll during those scenes. The trick is to use your fireballs to score hits, and then cover up with guard when the enemy counterattacks. The bosses are all based on ones from the Monster Wars episodes. We get El Gusano Gigante, the petroleum-eating microbe colony, aka the PEMC, Cryptocledius, the giant bat, and then, spoiler alert, Cyber Godzilla, created by aliens from the remains of the original Amerigoji. Visually, the game looks extremely similar to the previous game, to the point that looking at screenshots, it's difficult to tell one from the other. This is the reason why I did not pick this game up when it was new. I had already purchased Godzilla the series the previous year, and looking at the screenshots on the box, which is often all one had to go on back then, it looks so much like the original that I figured my very limited gaming budget would be better spent elsewhere. I still like the way the game looks, with the large sprite for Godzilla standing about half the height of the screen and moving very fluidly. The enemies are very much on the small side, but have some good detail, and the backgrounds are colorful. The boss enemies are suitably monstrous as well. I must note that, similar to the first game, the opening cinematic is fantastic. Doesn't add anything to the gameplay, of course, but I wanted to give the game credit for that opening as it does help with the overall presentation. The sound, it's fairly unremarkable, recycling most of the sound effects from the earlier game, as near as I can tell. The music is your typical chippy Game Boy tunes, but not something which got stuck in a loop in my head. The main point of contention for me on this game is the control scheme. The previous game featured essentially the same moves for Godzilla as this one. The addition of the Torrent of Atomic Fire means that the stomp can no longer be mapped to select button, as we said, but the bigger issue is that since Godzilla no longer moves forward automatically, the right input on the D-pad cannot be used for attacks. In the earlier game, the tail chop was button B and fireball was button A, the claw swipe was right and B, the chomp was right and A, and then stomp was select. Now, you hold the appropriate action button and then evidently double tap a direction to get to the attack? This is much more challenging than the earlier control scheme, especially for the stomp, which is one of the most useful attacks available as it damages all the ground-based opponents that are coming at you. The result is that I ended up using the fireball and atomic breath for more than 90% of the game, as the other attacks simply became too unreliable from a control standpoint. It does change the feel of the game from the original, but not necessarily in a positive way. I will say, since I do not have the manual having bought this game used off of eBay, I may be missing some nuance of the new controls, but on the whole, I prefer the control scheme from the earlier game to this one. The game is a decent length with 11 stages and 5 bosses to overcome. From start to finish, it took me about an hour to beat the game, which is about average for Game Boy action games of this era. The stages do get repetitive, but by switching up the backgrounds and the enemies, there is some variety, which is welcome. The difficulty generally ramps up in the form of the number of enemies on screen at a time and their specific attack patterns. By that last normal stage, you have to really understand those patterns and react accordingly, or you will never make it through to the end. I had to play the last stage at least 8 times before I was able to survive. Compare this to the final boss, whom I bested my first time out. The controls also contribute to this challenge level for what that's worth. One oddity is that the atomic fireball does not grow in size as you advance its level, which it did in the earlier game. This means that while you do now have a targeting crosshair to help aim the fireball, there is no room for error. The collision detection of the fireball is very tight, and if you are one tick off on your targeting, the fireball will sail by the enemy harmlessly. It's not an inventive game, but if you buy into the concept, I think it's the right length to keep your interest until you finish. Compared to the other Game Boy Godzilla games, we have the original puzzle-based game, the side-scrolling action game Kaiju O Gojira, and of course the original Godzilla the series, I would rank this one, unfortunately, at the bottom. It's not a bad effort. Building off of the earlier game, which I enjoyed, does appeal to me. The graphics are still well executed, and the new varieties of enemies and backgrounds are nice additions. The changes to the controls just absolutely sink this game for me, though. What was an unusual twist on a shoot-em-up game, essentially a shoot-em-up with the biggest player sprite imaginable, has been changed to a side-scrolling action game with a rather frustrating control scheme. I do appreciate the desire from the developers to change things up from the earlier game, but it's a net negative for me, unfortunately. Still, I was glad that I had a chance to sit down with the game and finish it, and I'm glad that I have it in my collection, both as a Godzilla fan and as a Game Boy and handheld gaming fan. So now I throw it to you, the listeners. Have you played these Godzilla the Series games for the Game Boy? Do you have Monster Wars? Do you prefer the original or the second one? Have you never heard of these? Are you as surprised as anybody to realize that there were Godzilla games for the Game Boy? Write me in and we'll talk about it. EarthDestructionDirective@yahoo.com. Or, of course, reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter or on YouTube. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to do a little bit of listener feedback and close out the show here on Earth Destruction Directive.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jason Giaconetti. You may recognize my voice from the Vault of Starling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. And if you don't, you should be listening. But today I need to ask you a few questions. Do you like big bugs and you cannot lie? Other robots just can't deny that when the Queen of Space walks in and puts a blaster in your face that your gears get sprung? Are you deep in the bee we're sharing? Are you hooked and you can't stop staring? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then have I got a podcast for you. Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. From classics to cults and all the yummy, yummy cheese in between. Look for my new show, Bots, Bugs, and Babes, on the Two True Freaks Network and on iTunes. That's Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. Double J on the Triple B is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
All right, we are back here on Earth Destruction Directive. I hold in my hands a little bit of listener feedback. If you would like to get in touch with the show, you can email me at earthdestructiondirective@yahoo.com. You, of course, can also reach us on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or our Discord. So take a listen to the outro of the show and check out the show notes to get all the information. Our email today comes from my good friend, Professor Allen, and he writes in Ultra Comics, episode 126. And Professor writes, Luke, it is always good to hear you talk about Ultraman, even when it's not my beloved 1960s TV show. Professor, stay tuned. Alan continues, like you, I've enjoyed these Marvel Comics miniseries. Because my fandom for the character does not extend much beyond childhood nostalgia, there are elements of continuity in the series that go over my head. However, I enjoy knowing that a larger world of Ultras exists, and products such as these help bring me into that world. I thought that this latest mini moved pretty quickly, but as you pointed out, a lot of that was character work. Nothing wrong with that, but you may be right that the action elements of the story did not necessarily require a 5-issue treatment. Hope that these miniseries continue, although based on the timing that you shared, I am not hopeful. Keep up the good work and keep them stomping, Professor Allen of the Relatively Geeky Podcast Network. Allen, first off, thank you very much for writing in. Really appreciate hearing from you, especially on Ultraman. I know that's kind of your main in to the Daikaiju fandom. And yeah, you know, I do really think that maybe, you know, even though the first two minis were both 5 issues and thus this one was going to be a 5-issue mini, that maybe looking at a different format might have served the story better. I understand that Marvel wants things to be consistent, right? They want volume 1, volume 2, volume 3, all about the same size, all with similar page counts so they can sell them all in the collected editions. But sometimes I think, you know, you got to lean more to the creative needs of the story than the commercial needs of the story. I'm not saying that one is more important than the other, because honestly, in American comics especially, they're both crucial. So, you know, it's just that's the luxury that's afforded to us as consumers, right? That we can provide criticism back on the product that we consume, and we don't necessarily know all the inputs that go into it. The other point I wanted to make is you talk about how, you know, you don't have the knowledge of the continuity. And I try to, with these Marvel comics, to point out the continuity of things that are the same or things that are different, not as, you know, oh my God, I can't believe they changed this. How could they make Jack into a mecha? You know, that's not what it was like on Return of Ultraman. That, to me, that doesn't add anything, right? I want to point it out just because, to me, it's interesting how you adapt something, right? In any adaptation, some things are going to stay the same, some things are different. That's no matter if you're adapting a book, a game, a comic, whatever. When you're adapting something to another medium, you have to change it. If you do it exactly, right, you just go back to the source material at that point, is my kind of thought, right? Your adaptation should bring some value in the way that you adapt it. Right. So I think you're part of the target audience here in that you are familiar enough with Ultraman to be attracted to the property when they put it out, but not so, you know, hip deep in the continuity that you're like, you become a nitpicking nerd. Right. Not saying you're a nerd, but so I think it's I'm thinking that, again, that you're the right target audience for this. And I do also really hope that even if we don't get the full thing, like if we don't get the Ultraman versus Avengers one that's been teased, I hope we at least get the finale, the conclusion to the story that they've built in these three minis. The main Ultra story I'd like to see finished out, whatever format that is, whether it's another mini, a one-shot, however. So, but thank you very much, Professor, for writing in. Always great to hear from you. As an aside, folks, this letter from the professor represents the last email in our email inbox. So please, if you want to send an email, I would really appreciate it. EarthDestructionDirective@yahoo.com. It doesn't have to be about Godzilla, the series Monster Wars. If you've never played that game or any other Game Boy games, it can be about Minus One or Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, or anything we've covered or anything that kind of tickles your fancy in the world of giant monsters. So look forward to hearing from you. And we can talk about that here on the show, as I like to say. All right. Social media. Likes, shares, thumbs ups, retweets. I guess we call them reposts now. I don't know. For the last episode came from Nathan Marchand and Jimmy from NASA. Together they are the Monster Island Film Vault, the Henshin Men podcast, Crystal Lady Jessica, the aforementioned Relatively Geeky podcast, and their leader, Professor Allen, Amber Coleman, Shay Morton, Joanna Flint, The Dinosaur King, that's a fantastic handle, Two True Freaks Podcast Network, Bill at Spy Vinyl, my brother Mr. Jason Giaconetti, Chris Mounts, Brian Severe, Billy D from the Magazines and Monsters Podcast, the aforementioned John Vanover, thanks again for the book, John, Derek WC from the Fanholes Podcast, Mr. Lomax, and Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us. Thank you, everyone, for all of that social media assistance. As I've talked about many times, you know, this is a labor of love, and any little bit you can do to help spread the word for a podcast that you like, it is very much appreciated, and I really do thank everyone for getting the word for Earth Destruction Directive out there on social media. This time, I'd also like to say, of course, that all are welcome here on Earth Destruction Directive. We are a show for the people. We're not a gatekeeping show. There's a lot of people that might be dipping their toe into the giant monster fandom right now between Minus One and the New Empire, and just a generally raised awareness of giant monsters. We saw something very similar to this with Godzilla versus Kong a few years back, and, you know, everybody starts as a new fan sometimes. So if you're, you know, just catching wind of this, you see it on social media, please feel free to, if you just want to listen, if you want to send me an email, if you want to reach out to me on Discord, want to reach out to me on Twitter, all of that's fine. I'm not here to lord over someone and say, well, you don't have the right credentials or anything like that. It's nonsense. Okay. We're here to celebrate giant monsters. And the more people that like giant monsters, the better. I think everything is, right? Because giant monsters teach us that you can build up while you crush cities down, right? That's kind of the way that goes. So all are, in fact, welcome, and Earth Destruction Directive is for everyone. All right, so a few minutes ago, I told the professor to stay tuned. So what are we covering next time? Well, we're jumping back into the world of Ultraman, and we are covering episodes 38 and 39 of the original Ultraman. That's right, the final two episodes of the original Ultraman series, featuring the monsters Kellia and Saigo, and then, of course, Zetton. Oh, very excited to be finishing this series up. It's been many years that we've been covering the first series of Ultraman here on the show, going back years and years, just based on the number of episodes that there are of the show. But very excited to finally get to the end of this and to see how the show sticks the landing. I know that that it's going to be... I know a lot of the details of that Zetton episode have been used in other media. We saw similar stuff in like Shin Ultraman, but very excited to go back and watch the original finale to Ultraman, and just to see how it all comes together. Right, folks, that's all I've got. So I hope everybody enjoyed our episode today, taking a look at Godzilla the series Monster Wars for the Game Boy Color. Hope everybody comes back next time for the final two episodes of the original Ultraman series. And until then, keep them stomping.
This has been Earth Destruction Directive, a Daikaiju podcast, produced and created by me, Luke Giaconetti, as part of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, available at twotruefreaks.com. This is a fan work celebrating the history and culture of Japanese giant monsters. All movies, TV shows, comic books, characters, and other intellectual property is copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended or implied. If you would like to send an email to the show, you can email me at earthdestructiondirective@yahoo.com. I try to respond to all emails, and if you send in some comments, I will read them on the show. All episodes of Earth Destruction Directive can be found at twotruefreaks.com. You can also find the show on your favorite podcatcher. Just search for Earth Destruction Directive. You can even leave a review on your podcatcher of choice if you'd like. You can find me on Facebook. Just search for first name Luke, last name EDD. You can also get in touch with me on Twitter. Just search for the handle at LJacone. That's LJACONE. The theme song for this podcast is Future Gladiator by Kevin MacLeod, downloaded from Incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0 license. Thanks for listening, and be sure to come back next time for more city-stomping fun here on Earth Destruction Directive. Tune in next time to hear the crusty old podcaster from Oklahoma say,
"There's a WTF moment if I ever saw one."